And when you're there to help people, people recognize that. And if you're truly there to help people, if you're not like just putting on a facade, and when people see that, they want to introduce you around because it makes them look good. They're happy to help their clients. They're happy to help their friends, and they feel better for helping you and their friends, right?
Hey, welcome back to the Business of Freelancing podcast, where we help you get better clients, make more money, and live a happier and a healthier life freelancing. I'm your host, Brendan Dunn. And today I'm sitting down actually with a good friend of mine. You probably know him if you've been listening and watching my stuff for a while. He's Keith Perhack. He's the founder of DelphiNut. He's also the creator of Summit Evergreen, which is kind of like an e-learning platform. But you'll hear all about that in the interview. We sat down, we talked about really one of the most popular themes that I've gotten, or one of the most popular responses that I've gotten from the podcast, which is the idea of working with big profile, or not even big profile, but high budget clients in more financially flush hubs like New York, San Francisco, Austin, you know, company or places rather that are big for kind of creative consulting. But when we happen to live in a place that is not that, you know, if we live in the middle of nowhere, or you know, one of my aspirations is to ultimately move really remotely to the country, which is, you know, my wife and I were on the same page in that. We like visiting cities. We don't want to live in a city. I wanted to bring Keith on because, you know, I've talked to a few people, Jonathan Tyrod of Cumbia, Marcus Blankenship of Creo in earlier episodes about this idea of working remotely when you have clients that are not near you. And those episodes received a lot of favorable feedback. So I wanted to get Keith on because he lives in what he calls the Kansas of Japan. And he works with American clients and also has staff and everything else that are kind of geographically distributed all over the world. So he and I sat down. We talked about everything about kind of how to get started with that and considerations and all that. So I think you're going to really like this episode, even if you do live in a big, let's say, a place with a lot of good clients that are directly local to you. But before we get there, I do want to, at the end of the last episode, I talked about how I was working on putting together the next conference. So I want to keep you guys in the loop because I know a lot of the listeners, I know a lot of you actually, I think most of the people who were at the conference in Virginia last September rather, are listeners of the show. And I know that about half of my listenership is not in the US. And a good percentage of those are people in Europe. So from the beginning, I got a lot of feedback from people saying, hey, I'd love to go to the conference. But you know, hopping the pond and getting to the US and getting to your neck of the woods in Virginia, not an easy thing. So I'm happy to say that June 22nd through 24th is when the conference is gonna be. It's in Stockholm, Sweden. It's at a amazing Japanese-inspired resort. Very apropos, actually, of my discussion with Keith today, considering he's in Japan. We've got a lot of amazing stuff that I've got planned for this. Even if you're not in Europe, it's worth your while to keep it on your radar if you can make it out to Scandinavia this June. So again, I'll be telling you more about that, especially once I've got pricing and everything else nailed down and have a site up and running. And if you are a European company that serves freelancers, consultants, and agencies, I am looking for sponsors. I'd like to keep the tickets down the cost of the tickets down as much as possible. Reach out to me, Brennan@planscope.io, if that is you, and let's talk. All right, so without any further delay, let's get into the episode. Here's Keith. Hey guys, I want to introduce you to my good friend, Keith Perhack. Keith and I go way back. I don't know how many years we've known each other, but Keith is a good friend of Patrick McKenzie, who I think a lot of you know. And if you listen to Keith's podcast with Patrick, you've definitely heard his voice. And so Keith, right now, I know you've got your consultancy, DelphiNut. You also have Summit Evergreen, which is kind of like an e-learning tool. And then you also have the Infusion. I always forget the name of the Infusion software, Metrics. Yeah. Yeah. So you've got a lot of things going on.
Lots of things. And then, especially with my consultancy, I have clients, and then I also do kind of my own personal branding as well. So lots of fingers and lots of pies.
And you're probably 12 hours time shifted from a lot of both your clients and your customers, I'd assume.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, I'm in the middle of nowhere, Japan. That's where I met Patrick. We were the two white computer people in our prefecture. And we met each other and we're like, hey, you understand what we do. And so we became really good friends pretty quickly. But yeah, so I'm in the middle of nowhere, Japan, where there is no marketing. And I will say 90% of my clients are in the US, which makes it really interesting for finding clients, working with clients, because whenever I talk to anyone, there is that generally what 13 to 16 hour time difference, right?
Right. And that's I think what I want to talk about this morning is, you know, early on in the podcast, I think around episode 10-ish, I talked with, there were two episodes, one with Marcus Blankenship, a mutual friend, and another with both a Colombian agency, Cumbia, and a Bangkok-based consultancy called, I want to say it's Uzi, I believe. I always get tripped up pronouncing it. But anyway, we talked about kind of working from the middle of nowhere. Those were really popular episodes because there's a lot of people who, they don't have it as extreme as you, right? Like there's not a 12-hour time difference from their clients. They're not on literally different continents, but they're in maybe the middle of nowhere, Iowa, or, you know, someplace that isn't like New York, San Francisco, LA, something like that. And a lot of the questions that I've gotten center around, well, I don't really have like local networking groups that are actually viable, or I don't actually have people in my area who could afford me or need the kind of stuff that I do. So I'm not in a big city, but I'm in a city and there's kind of like a thriving business scene and a tech scene and everything like that. But it's not, you know, it's not a Silicon Valley by any stretch. But I've never had an issue. Like I can imagine if I lived, we were out looking for a house out in the mountains, and there are these small towns with like 400 citizens, and they don't really have like local business means the
convenience store down the street, like the mom and pop shop,
right?
Or the guy who farms, right?
It's
the farmer, right?
Exactly. So, admittedly, I don't really have a lot of experience in a place that's totally, I don't want to say where you're is totally devoid of any kind of work possibilities. I know that you've had to kind of look elsewhere to find all of your work. So I wanted to just kind of chat with you about that, like how you got from starting out to really having this thriving consultancy, and you know, you're not going on site to work with clients. You're managing a lot of it from Japan, and you also closed the deals. You know, got the clients, remotely also. So,
and it's interesting because it's like you say, most of my clients I have never met in person.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, so you,
yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, so I've actually not met many of them. Now, when I do go to the States, I go to the States about two or three times a year, and I make it a point to go and meet them and go have coffee and like show my face to them when I'm there. But when I'm first starting to meet a client, it's all over Skype. I've never talked to them. I've never met them. And usually the entire deal is closed over Skype and email. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people do say, oh, I'm in the middle of Alabama, I'm in the middle of nowhere, Nebraska or whatever, I'm never going to meet people. It cost me $1,500 and 24 hours to fly to the States to see any single client, right? So
it's not really feasible. And
it's not feasible, but it's still doable, right? It's still doable to find these clients and to connect with them even over the internet, right?
Like, how did you do that? How did you get started without any direct personal connections to prospective clients?
Yeah, the biggest. So my company's pretty much all referral based. So we're starting to do a little bit more marketing right now, just to kind of test the waters and try it out. But I'll say almost 100% of my clients are through referrals of people I've worked with in the past or people that I know who have recommended me. Other developers recommend me because we do a lot of marketing stuff. And that's really been the kind of the best way to grow my business so far.
Even at the beginning, like when you didn't really have a, like, how do you start without that referral base?
So actually my first referral was Ramit Sethi at I Will Teach. And I got referred to him from Patrick. So it was, and it wasn't even like a marketing slash consultancy thing. It was just, he was looking for someone to do some front end development. I was quitting my job and I said, yeah, I'd love to work for you. And I did that for almost 4 years, I believe. And I met a lot of people through that. I made a lot of contacts. I learned a lot. And, you know, being in that community, I was just able to talk to a lot of people. And I was able to share what I was learning and what I was doing. And just through that, people started to see me as this guy who can build this technology for marketers, which was a very, it was a niche that a lot of people needed, but they didn't have good access to, right? And so someone that I had worked with before, they recommended me to another marketer and I worked with them. And then they said, hey, you did all this stuff. My other friend's looking for the same thing. So I started working with them and just kind of snowballed from there, right?
I mean, were there concerns with a lot of, I mean, before you kind of had the track record of being able to successfully do work remotely, I mean, what kind of objections, if any, did you get?
The biggest one, I guess, was price and track record, really, was what it was. And so at the beginning, I mean, I had kind of the full-time consulting gig that was not full-time, right? I was a consultant, but I was able to pay my wages to eat and live and support my family. So I wasn't really, there was no need for me to go out and grab every single client that came by. So I had a lot of conversations. I helped a lot of people for kind of pro bono to get more experience or to like get introduced to other people, et cetera. And the biggest, I guess the biggest pushback I had at first was just price. It's like, hey, you've only worked for this one guy. I'm not going to pay your rate. I don't know that you can do anything for me, right? And so working with other people at maybe even a lower rate or just as I got more experience, that kind of went away. So I haven't had anyone come up to me in, I guess, 2-3 years and say, I'm not sure that you can provide the value.
Right. Because now you have the case studies and everything.
Right. I have the case studies. And because it's all referral based, but back then, I mean, the referrals were less solid, I guess, right? They were like someone who knew
like
me.
An email intro or something, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And now it's like one of their good friends recommends Keith, who's worked with them for a year or two. And it's like, hey, these guys are great. You should totally use them. There's a lot more weight to that, right?
Right.
And that's what's really kind of helped me. I won't say close the deals, but to find more people and to find people who trust me and who I know I can do good work for.
So there was no real objection ever to the time zone issue, the you're working when I'm sleeping sort of thing. Like, was that?
Ironically, no. I've never, like, some people, especially after we worked together for a long time, are like, I wish you were in the States. But 9 times out of 10, I have no objections. And I think the main reason is I'm there when they wake up. I'm there when they go to sleep. So I can get them on kind of both sides. And then while they're sleeping, I'm getting the work done. So it's interesting because it's almost like magic. So they tell me what they want. They go to sleep. And when they wake up, it's done.
it's like Keith the Tooth Fairy kind of like, you know, you exactly, show exactly. up with the goods in the morning. You're a family guy. You've got a wife and kid. Kids or kid?
Kids, too.
Okay, yeah. Kids. And presumably, you don't, you're not up, like, you're not, you know, there's a lot of people who work in, you know, out of China or India or wherever that basically live like Western schedules or like a U.S. schedule. But you don't. You, I assume you usually wake up when it's sun's coming up and you go to bed when it goes down.
My kids waking up, yeah.
Right. But what? How does that affect kind of project management? Like, how do you... I mean, I assume most things are asynchronous where you're not doing a lot of, or maybe you do a lot of live meetings, but how does that work? Like, how do you structure your...
Most of the stuff is asynchronous. We do live meetings in the morning and evening with clients. And since I have gotten a couple more clients who expect, or not really expect, but they want more real-time communication and they want more real-time, like, getting things done. And so, you know, I'm completely in Japan. One of my main devs is in Japan. And then I also have one of my main devs in the US. And then I have an account manager in the US as well. So what that gives me is, hey, yeah, I'm, and this is very recent. This is within the last year. So this,
You didn't start out hiring.
This is definitely not starting out. Like,
sure.
We grew very organically and we grew very slowly. The account manager's a contractor as well. So he's not full time, but he allows me to have a contact point. So if someone's like, oh my God, things are exploding, they can go to him. He can have first touch and then either send it to the devs if it's something they can do or wake me up if I need to be woken up and just kind of manage expectations, make sure that things are flowing and just kind of provide that time buffer, right? Because honestly, to all clients, everything is urgent, right? And so if every client had a direct call to me, I'd never get to sleep.
Yeah, right.
So he provides that buffer and it's kind of like, okay, these things are urgent. He does the triage and just kind of helps smooth out expectations and make sure that everything's flowing at the right pace, right? And that's honestly for me, I'm very bad about my own scheduling and my own mapping of time. And he has actually been the number one thing that's kind of helped my business just make sure that everything's getting done, things aren't getting dropped, and that I'm not just jumping on the latest fire that's coming out, right? Which is how I did the first 3 years of my consultancy.
So I guess in terms of, you know, I think the average listener is not in the position to have a PM account manager type role that's external, that's not themselves. Let's talk about like what advice could we give to people who are, you know, like you said, in Alabama, let's say, I don't want to say Alabama is, Birmingham I know is a great town and everything like that, but let's say remote, rural, I guess is a good way of putting it. What, you know, a lot of the time, a lot of the emails that I'll get from either customers or people on my, you know, in my audience are often around, you know, I live in the middle, geographically in the middle of nowhere, and I am forced to kind of perpetually become a subcontractor for an agency that's not in the middle of nowhere because I don't know how to secure and manage my own client base, right? My own direct clients. Because a lot of the things that I recommend tend to center around, well, you want to work directly with the client. You don't want to go through, you don't want to be going through like a staffing company, for lack of a better way of putting it. You know, in terms of the...
How do you do it? How do you start out when you're in the middle of nowhere, right?
Well, there's the start out, but then there's also the, I mean, obviously you need a start. Otherwise you can't manage. I mean, if there's nothing to manage, mm-hmm. there's no sense in getting good at project management. I guess, let's talk hypotheticals. If you hadn't met Patrick and you didn't get that first key referral to Ramit, what do you think you would have done? Or how would you have done things if you could go back in time and kind of like coach yourself?
So I actually had, I had done a little freelancing before I had met Ramit, both right before and then also after college, before I had moved to Japan. And they were also through kind of referrals / just people I knew. And the way I got those was just talking to a bunch of people and talking to people and about what I do, what their problems are. And I've really found that people want to help you. Like if they know that, hey, I'm a freelancer, I do this, this is how I eat kind of thing. Just being forward about it. It's like, hey, this is what I do. Do you know anyone who wants that service? Right. And maybe they do, maybe they don't. But 9 times out of 10, if they do know someone, they're going to send them your way. Maybe it's your parents. Maybe it's someone that you went to school with. Maybe you can't discount people that could maybe introduce you to someone just because they're not in your niche. And I think that's the biggest thing that people forget, is that it's the whole 6 degrees of separation thing. If you're just looking in your own niche, you're probably not going to find anyone who needs your services, right?
Because you see that a lot. I mean, especially I think with, more general purpose kind of mixer events, networking events, whatever it might be, where you're there and there's a bunch of like real estate agents or bankers. I was actually just talking to somebody the other day who he and I were, it was actually through office hours, through the W Freelancing Clients course. And he was asking me, he was saying like, I went to this event, met a lot of people. The one guy I did kind of secure a lunch meeting with is a VP at a like a bank, or like at a branch of a bank, right? And he was like, I don't see myself getting work from his bank. I mean, he's, it's a big national bank. And what I told him was, who does he interact with all day? Like,
right.
He's interacting with businesses. Like, he's interacting with people who need funding or whatever. Like, this guy has a Rolodex. Like, that's exact. Like, don't think so. Like you just said, don't think so immediate. And I think that's often the issue. Like, one of our best referral sources, to be honest, was a lawyer who came to a lot of our events, who would help companies incorporate and help them, deal with partnership agreements and everything. And whenever it would come up, the idea or the question of like, hey, yeah, we're having some trouble hiring a development team or hiring engineers, for instance, he would routinely refer them out to us. So, yeah, I mean, his law firm never hired us, but he didn't care, because he was making himself look good to his clients by giving them these connections, right? It's not, I don't want to say it's all kumbaya-ish, but there's a degree of, it kind of is in a way, where we're helping each other out. And it's one of the things I'm really big on, is you don't want to be that guy or girl at a networking event who is the, used car sales person, who is just like, buy, 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 me, hire, hire, hire me, or whatever. Versus you want to be the actual person that people want to get to know better.
Exactly. And I found the times that I have a good relationship and I do get a referral, or maybe even just like a referral to a referral to a referral, like five friends down is when I get a job or something. It's when I go in with no expectations or no, hey, I'm trying to sell, or even especially when I don't discount people for what they do. It's like I'm talking to a baker and I'm suddenly like, oh, I have nothing. This guy can't get me anything. I have nothing to give this guy. I should end this conversation. You can't go in with that type of attitude, because the baker might know a lawyer. The lawyer might know a ton of people that are looking for IT. You have to go in with a helpful attitude for everyone. And it's exactly like you say, you can't go in with the push, push, push. And what I've seen in my business is I try to be as helpful as possible. I'm not there to make a sale. I'm not there to close a deal. I'm there to help people. And when you're there to help people, people recognize that. And if you're truly there to help people, if you're not like just putting on a facade, right? And when people see that, they want to introduce you around, because like you say, it makes them look good. They're happy to help their clients. They're happy to help their friends. And they feel better for helping you and their friends, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's such a common theme. I think a lot of people are saying that. But I get a handful of emails a week that are centered on something like that, right? Something like, I'm going, hey, I read your advice on going to a, local chamber of commerce meeting, but everyone there is like bakery owner or real estate agent or mortgage broker or like MLM person who's trying to sell, like, who thinks they own a company and they sell like oils or something like that.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And I'm like, yeah, that's okay. Like, don't think so. The mistake I see people make all the time is they go to a networking event expecting to walk away with a new client with a signed contract. And that doesn't, I mean, yes, maybe that'll happen once in a blue moon, but don't go with that expectation. Otherwise, you're going to give up.
Yeah. And people see right through it. If you go to a networking event and you always know which guys are trying to sell, right? When they come to talk to you, they're so forceful and you can sense it. Well, they can sense it too when you're trying to be like that. And that's why I think being genuine is so important to that, right? It was interesting. I was giving some seminars here in Japan and this older woman comes up and I'm doing IT marketing seminar. So I'm wondering, first of all, why she's here. And she was saying, oh yeah, I run an English school. I'm like, okay, that's nice. And we just start talking. And I know nothing about her, but we meet a couple more times and then she invites me over and she's like, hi, this is my friend who runs the IT incubator in your town. You guys should do something together.
Right.
And right. It's just, if I had discounted that, I would have never gotten that intro. I would never gotten the work, the jobs, the anything. It's amazing how just trying to help people will benefit you in the end.
I think that the hard part to kind of get a handle on is that there's still a high degree of luck involved in that, where you were in control of not writing this lady off, but had she not come across that person, you know, maybe she would have never given you any, you know, nothing would have ever, no fruit would have yielded from that relationship. But the way I look at it is typically most referrals come as some degree of luck. I mean, you can influence the likelihood that luck kicks in by, you know, keeping your relationship solid. But the way I look at it is, you know, if most of us rely on luck from, let's say, getting referrals from past clients, and our only referral base is past clients, well, that doesn't scale very quickly. You know, that base is going to scale based on how quickly we can do work or get clients. But basically with that approach that, you know, we've been talking about, that's a way to get that same sort of, hey, I've given you value and don't forget about me sort of thing, right? For lack of a better way of putting it, that increases that likelihood. That just basically, I mean, it's that whole like increasing your luck surface area. Like there's more opportunity for luck to hit you, I guess. You're expanding that sale.
Well, you can even think of it just, okay, so it's luck. Maybe you have a 1% chance. And if you only take that chance once, you had a 1 in 100 chance. But if you take that chance 100 times, then each time you have a 1 in 100 chance, right? You're increasing the chance. So I forget who said the quote, but it's like luck is something that you can practice. The more times you do it, the luckier you get because you just had more chances at it, right?
Right, right. And you can kind of I've both been in Vegas before at the same time. you can influence you can hedge, I guess, a lot of how luck plays out in your life by doing certain things. So I didn't know we'd talk about this per se, but I'm glad we're kind of moving towards this in this talk.
I do also want to talk about like how to get to these events and stuff.
Well, that's what I want to talk about next. I want to talk specific, like, so Keith shows up at random conference event. What's your strategy? Like, how do you build that luck for yourself?
It is funny because when we went to MicroConf Vegas this year, this was the first Vegas one I had gone to. I'd gone to MicroConf Europe twice. And I went with some of my team. And they were like, okay, what's the sales plan? I'm like, there's no sales plan. This is the one time a year where I get to be in a community of my peers and people I respect and people I want to learn from and talk to. There's no plan. There's no strategy. I just want to talk to people. And I go in not trying to sell. I'm not trying to sell. I came out with three contracts actually from that. I was not even trying to sell to anyone. I just wanted to hear about what people were doing. People had heard about what I'm doing. I talked about what I'm doing and they were interested.
Can you run me through kind of what maybe like one of the deals that emerged like start to finish life cycle at the conference of that deal?
Well, two of them were signups for the SaaS. So I had one sign up for Summit Evergreen, one sign up for Segmetrics.
Well, let's talk about consulting.
So, yeah, and so the consulting one, but the, I mean, the signups for the SaaS ones as well, they were built on conversation. I talked about what
absolutely. We did. Yes.
I talked what they were doing, and then they were like, oh, that sounds like the perfect solution, signed up. The consulting one was similar, where it was just like, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing this. Well, how are you doing it? Like, what? So we sat down and we had a coffee and we talked about what he's doing. I gave a bunch of advice, and it's like, oh, I'd totally do it like this. I'd do a tripwire, and then I'd mark it like this, and maybe give some advice on the specific tool he was using, etc.
So, and then it's narration. You're basically demonstrating your expertise.
Exactly.
So go on.
I'm demonstrating expertise, but it's not even a strategy. It's just like, I want to help this guy as much as possible.
Whether or not he hires you, he's still gotten something of value from you.
Right. Exactly. And you know, we parted ways, and it was like, hey, awesome. Great talking with you, blah, blah, blah. We left. I talked to him a couple more times at the conference. Didn't think a thing of it. Got an email a week later saying, hey, I'd really like to do something together.
Okay.
That's how it worked. There was no sales process. There was follow-up from me where I'm like, I'll email people that I talk to at the conference because it's great and I love talking to them and I'm curious what they're doing. And I'm still in touch with a lot of people that I had never met before the conference. And that's leading into a referral. And it's interesting because I also see them starting to work with each other. So, for example, I had been working with Kai, who you had on the podcast, I believe last week or week before. And then I think I introduced him to you, or I forget, you guys knew each other. And then he started working with you, and he's working with a couple more friends that I know. He worked with some people at MicroConf that he had met. And just, it's interesting how as I'm meeting more people, they're starting to work with each other. And I see how this whole referral basis stands up, right?
Right. And had Kai approached me from outside of that circle, for lack of a better way of putting it,
right?
I would have been like, you know, can I, is this guy legitimate? Is he reliable? Like, there would be a lot of unknowns that would keep me from starting. But I think what Kai did well is he really provided value for all of us.
Yeah.
And now look at what has happened. I mean, he's got quite a few four-figure retainers each month from just our circle of friends, plus a lot more, I think, too. So
yeah, he does. He has a bunch of the big clients as well, I would say. But it's interesting, and you know, it works both ways. So I was approached by someone who wanted to do some outbound lead generation as well, and I looked at their website, saw that my friend Jana was on the was one of their customers, so I emailed her and was like, hey, how's that going? And that's going to kind of be the decision maker there. It's like, is this someone I want to work with? Is it not? What do the people I respect think about this, right? And you look at, it's interesting because, so for people who don't know, I'm really in the marketing space. I'm in the technical marketing space. A lot of my clients are marketers. And I think there's no other industry that is as much based on what the big names are doing than marketing. Like, if you are trying to launch an app in the marketing space, if you don't have a big name attached to you, no one's going to sign up. It's really interesting. Like, it doesn't matter how good it is. It doesn't matter how bad it is. If a big name, let's say Jeff Walker, says, hey, I'm using this now, everyone's just floods it, right? But and it works at our levels as well, that's what referrals are, right? Referrals are taking someone you trust and having them recommend a solution to you or recommend a person to you. And that's the benefit of growing that, right?
I'm looking right now at an email from a reader that came in a few months back. I've responded to him and I've already kind of helped him through this, but I want to get your take on this. If you don't mind me reading this verbatim, I won't read his name, but he wrote in asking, so this is about networking. How do you drive the conversation towards giving advice? I had success with asking what their business problem or what problems their business has, rather than asking about technology related problems or whatever, which hasn't been successful, but I don't feel comfortable asking that. Okay, so I misread that. English isn't his first language. So basically he's saying, yeah, I haven't had success, rather, in asking about their business. not feel comfortable, which again, this is an engineer. He's more technical. He's more comfortable talking about his craft than their business. Right. What would you say to him?
I've tried the, hey, what problems are you having? It never works out for me. The technical side never works out for me. The, hey, what problems are you having? The main thing that I've found to help to kind of get information out of people. Oh, it sounds so horrible when I say it that way, but you know what I mean? Like yeah. To start a conversation, to have a conversation about it, is just to ask what they do and say, hey, that sounds really interesting. Can you tell me more? And because when you're asking what problems are you having, suddenly that person's guard kind of goes up. It's like, well, he's trying to solve a problem, or like, why would you want to know my problems, right? But if you just have a conversation about what they do, those problems are going to come out. Just think about, as a developer, think about when someone asks you how your day was. Like a simple question, how was your day? If you had a really great day and you built something awesome, you're like, oh, you got to see this. I just built this. This is so cool. If you had a really crappy day, you're like, oh man, I was just hitting against MySQL all day. Like I spent 6 hours on this stored procedure. It was horrible, blah, blah, blah. You want to talk about that kind of stuff. You don't have to pry this information out of people. All you have to do is be genuinely interested in what they're talking about and ask questions about that. Or if you're really good at faking it, just be really good at faking it.
Right.
My mother-in-law, she has the worst accent ever. She's Japanese, and I could not understand her for the first year that I was talking to her. But I was very good at nodding and smiling, so she thought I understood everything. We would have hour-long conversations. She would tell me everything. I'd have to ask my wife later what she was actually saying. But you can still do that, right? Like, yeah. You don't have to be an expert in their field. You just have to be interested.
You need to take an interest. I mean, people love talking about their business. People love talking about themselves. And I think that's... You know, it's kind of like the that's kind of Socratic idea that the beginning of wisdom is the knowledge that you don't know anything. And I think there is something to be said about that, where like one of the people who really was one of the most interesting people I'd ever met was I was at FunConf in Ireland. This was, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. And I met Derek Sivers, and he... You know, this is a guy who had sold a $20 million company, was like living out of a yurt with like in Mongolia or something crazy. you know, very, very well known, very well off and so on. And all he did was he would ask me like, so tell me about this. And then he would follow up a bit with whatever I said and have me like drill down more into that. And if you read any of his content, that's permeates into his writing also. It really left a really good impression on me, of him, I guess. And I think that I've tried to take, at least in my own, for lack of a better way of putting it, business networking experience, I've tried to take a similar attitude where, look, I don't know anything about what it's like to... I remember we were working with a construction company, and I was like, look, I'm fascinated by what must... Like, I think putting together a website and managing that project is tricky sometimes. Mm-hmm. You're building like a 60-story building that if it's wrong, it will kill people. Like, you know, I mean, yep. that to me is fascinating. And what I'm looking for is what common ground do we have? What can we, and that's usually where I think when conversations really click and things start to work well, it's when we can figure out what is similar about our two businesses. Like, what is a common baseline denominator that we can talk about and kind of empathize with each other's issues and everything?
Right. And it goes on that once you have that, once you are able to empathize, once you're able to make that connection, maybe they're not going to be the client, but they might recommend you to someone, right? You're just...
That's exactly it. Yeah.
I hate saying things like, oh, you're building a network and stuff, but that's really what you're doing. You're building a community, I guess you could say, right? Like, for example, my dad... One of his best friends, he flips copy machines. That's his entire job. That's how he makes his money.
Buys old copy like Xeroxes, yep. And
he refurbishes buys old them. Xeroxes, and he doesn't even refurbish them. He just sells them.
Okay.
And it was amazing to me because I've never heard of this. Like, this is one of those jobs that they never tell you about. Like when you're at like the job fair at college, right? And he makes enough money. He lives in Santa Barbara, California, right? So he's doing fairly well. And I was like, oh, that's it. That's interesting. So you then you find the clients to sell it to and everything. He's like, no, that's a pain in the ass. I sell it to a reseller. And I'm like, so what exactly do you do? He's like, well, I said, well, do you find the companies that are going out of business that are trying to sell? He's like, no, I put up ads on Google. And he's like, so he puts up ads on Google. People contact him to sell the machine. He puts a margin on it and sells it to a reseller that then sells it to someone else, right? And this just, it fascinated me. I was like, I had never even heard of this type of job, let alone met someone who did it. And he was fascinated with the marketing strategies that I had used for my clients, right? Because he's very used to, he knows how to do ads for his business, but he doesn't know how to get them to tie into his phone system or what kind of automation he could do. Like, how could he make this more performant and stuff? So we sat around drinking wine and having this conversation for like 3 hours. And a couple of weeks later, a month later or something like that, he sends me an email and he's like, hey, I got this guy in Portland who I think you'd really hit it off with. And he introduced me to him and he introduced me to someone else. And it started this whole conversation and this whole kind of referral network again, right? Just because we were interested in what each other were doing.
Right. And you both have, to a degree, provided value to each other.
Exactly.
And reciprocated on that.
And I think, especially if you're out in the middle of nowhere, one of the most important things you can do is go to a conference. Mm-hmm. I really feel that. So the first conference I ever went to was MicroConf Europe, the first one in Prague.
That was the first? Really?
That was the first.
Really?
First non-Japanese conference I ever went to.
Uh-huh.
And I was scared, I will just say, because I mean, I had not met anyone. I knew you. I knew Nathan. And I knew of Ryan Delk. And I essentially went on Patrick's coattails. And I pretty much hung around him for the first day.
You're basically
and a half.
His wingman.
Pretty much. Right. Right? And it was great. Like, I had the best time. I met people. We went out to dinner, went out to drinks. I got to really know everyone. And the craziest part was when I went back the next year to MicroConf again, only 12 months later, and it was like a reunion. I knew everyone. Everyone knew me. We were exchanging gifts. We were just so glad to see each other. It was so much fun, right? And it blew my mind that was only 12 months. It was 1 year where I went from literally knowing no one to feeling like I was back in like my old stomping grounds, mm-hmm. in my community, right?
Absolutely. It was the same thing for me. Yeah.
And I think it's especially important for people who are out in the middle of nowhere that you make that effort to go to these conferences, because that's where you're going to meet people.
Right.
And maybe you're not going to get a job from them, especially if you go to like me going to a startup conference. I'm probably not going to get.
Yeah, you're going to a conference for bootstrappers who are literally.
Yeah, exactly.
Spending the little money they do have to like hopefully pay their bills before. While their product ramps up.
$50 for drip is a lot of money, right?
Right, right.
So
not exactly a place to get built, find clients who are going to pay you a few hundred an hour.
Exactly. But that has turned into work from other things or other referrals, and also just the community of knowing each other and being able to help each other. I'm now in 9 Slack chats that range from marketing Slack chats to sales Slack chats to bootstrapper to hardcore developer Slack chats, all because I met these people and they introduced me to groups, right? And I have literally no community around me. I think within maybe an hour and a half drive, there are 4 or 5 other English developers and who also understand marketing, right? And that's a very low number. Like, I can't go out for coffee with someone and talk shop, right? And so the conference is really my one time a year where I get to meet everyone, see everyone, catch up, and build those connections and build just that community.
Love her dearly, but I've brought my wife to a few conferences, and usually she's like, oh, let's go out to dinner together and everything else. And I end up missing out on a lot of the what gets called kind of the hallway track, right? Which is what happens outside of, like, nowadays. You know, I hate saying this, especially now that I'm organizing a conference, but when I go to a conference, I'm really not even as interested in the talks. I care more about what happens outside of the ballroom. Like, you know, I want to, like, it's the dinners and the random sitting in the hotel lobby talking with people until midnight sort of thing, and just talking about our businesses and that sort of stuff. It's funny. I keep waiting for somebody to create a conference where there's literally no talks. It's just like, you know, it's more of like a summit where we all just hang out. Like the times that I've gone solo, you know, I mean, it's, I get a lot more out of it, I want to say, versus,
Yeah. And I think I fully agree. I like the talks. I take lots of notes on the talks. I learn a lot from the talks, but the real value I get is from the hallway track, talking with people. And I think that the talks really spur on that conversation, because a lot of the conversations I have are based on the talks.
It's an icebreaker, right? Like exactly, the icebreaker is, what did you think about blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Exactly.
Which is good. Well, I mean, that's actually a great point for the need for talks. Is it's kind of like a common ground. It's better than how, like, what do you think of the weather or something?
Exactly. Although it's kind of ironic to have like a keynote speaker and like, just he's the icebreaker, right? Like that's the whole reason that he's there.
Yeah. Or if it's MicroConf Vegas last year, it's, what do you think about the exploding light thing? There was a, for those who didn't hear, there was a, I forgot what it was. It was like one of the spotlights that literally like blew up. And
yeah, they put it underneath the sprinkler or something. I can't, like the heat sensor, it was like right underneath the heat sensor. And so it set off the sprinklers in the entire conference room.
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy.
It's good icebreaker, like, though. But yeah, so I guess to recap, I mean, the big thing is, and this shouldn't be anything new to anyone, especially if you've been listening to the podcast, which is really just, it's about the long game, I think. I mean, I think the more that I've immersed myself in consulting and talking with people who are really doing extremely well, building these, you know, these consultancies, these agencies and so on. It's all about, you know, everyone's like, what's the perfect website to get that job that I can land today? You know, everyone wants that immediate, you know, it's that kind of like the Netflix / Amazon Prime culture, I guess. But the fact of the matter is, the way that high value consulting works, it's still very much a, there's a lot of elements of the old boys club still kind of there, you know.
And I'm not going to lie. Like, if you are in Silicon Valley, if you are in New York, if you are in one of these hubs or can easily get there, it's a lot easier to do this type of consulting. It's a lot easier to play in that world. But it's also so much more expensive to live and work in that world, right? And you can have a very profitable business and a very successful business completely remote, being in the middle of nowhere where you want to live and just traveling every now and then, right?
Doing the rounds.
And I just can't stress this enough. If you look at it cynically and you are trying to get clients and you go to these network meetings and you're nurturing relationships and all this stuff, and you look at it in a very mechanical way, people can tell. Like, maybe not at first, but eventually it will get to the point where it's going to dry up, right? And I've honestly found just being genuinely helpful is the number one way to grow your community and your business, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's so much like, I think a lot of people take getting work a bit like, let's say you're single and you go hang out at Starbucks with the sole intent of finding a spouse. Mm-hmm. Kind of like that, you know, like it's not really how it works. You know, I mean, it's like
going to a bar. It's like going to ladies' night at a bar where, and I see this a lot where, like, especially developers, they look for development work in groups of developers. So they'll join developer communities and they're like, yeah, I'm looking for work. Well, so is everyone else, right? Like, you want to go where other people are not, where other people like you are not. And that's why, you know, you always recommend Chamber of Commerce, talking to like bakers. It's like, that's where you're going to find the people that can connect you to work.
And my new thing is, find people, you know, bakers I would put on a lower scale. But what I would say is, you know, find, where do other service providers hang out? You know, where do lawyers go? Because lawyers have clients. Where do bankers go? Because bankers have business clients. I mean, these are the kind of people that I think are really great referral sources for us.
Yeah.
Because these are the people that all day long, they're talking to potential clients of ours. And they have these commercial relationships already with people. Now, again, if you're talking to a lawyer who bills $400 an hour and, you know, you get a referral from him, it's kind of self-qualifying, right? Like that referral is in a way a little more qualified than the baker who says, you know, oh, yeah, you know, we had this person came in who bought a birthday cake for their kid. And yeah, they're talking about a website or something. So here you go. Here's right. their phone number. You know, there's a degree of lead quality difference there.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, the two things are being systematic in that you're being aware and conscious of, you know, attending these events, why you're attending them, what your ultimate long-term goal is and so on. And then just showing up, like actually doing it versus reading a lot of blog posts or listening to a lot of podcasts and everything else that that help you do that or that coach you or tell you to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, Keith, I just want to thank you again for coming on. I know it's late there.
Thank you.
But best place for people to I know Patrick, I think, has schooled you before for not having a closing statement, promotional statement. So we're going to see if you've done your homework.
I have not done my homework. So the biggest thing I'm doing right now is keithperhack.com, KEITHPERHAC.com. I am the only Keith Perhack apparently in the world, so I'm very easy to Google. But that's pretty much what I'm doing right now. So I'm working on tons of client stuff, two SaaSes, and really what I'm looking to do for my own stuff at keithperhack.com is teach people how to start MVPs and start products, both from a technology and a marketing standpoint. Like what is the mindset that you need to be in? How do you do it? And like, what are all the foibles that are going to get you that you can't even imagine right now? So that's where I'm trying to go in the next couple of months. So
cool. I had no idea you had a personal domain.
I
made it to the big leagues now.
Very recent. I know, right? I had perhack.jp for a long, long time. That's still my main domain for like email and everything. But yeah, no, I finally got my name domain.
Cool.
4 years later. So
very cool.
Brennan, cool. Thank you so much for having me on this.
Thank you, Keith. Yep. Talk to you soon, and I'll probably see you at an upcoming conference.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I'll be in the States very soon. So.
Cool. See you soon.
All right. Cheers. Thanks.
Hope you enjoyed that interview with Keith. If you're not on my list and you want to be notified of things like the European conference or even the upcoming American conference, which is going to be this autumn in the U.S., along with all the other things I'm working on, including, like I mentioned in the last episode, the upcoming course on roadmapping. You're going to want to go over to doubleyourfreelancing.com and join my newsletter from there. That's the best way to get updates from me. And finally, if you would kindly leave a review of the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, that would also help a lot too. Again, that's really the only feedback that I get from, well, sometimes people email me, but for the most part, I get general stats on how many people physically downloaded the media file for the podcast, but I don't have a lot of insight into what listeners think of the episodes and everything like that. And the best way to get that is by leaving a review on iTunes. Like I mentioned, I get now notified every day if there's a review, so I don't need to go into iTunes and manually check. All right, well, thanks again, and we'll see you next time for another exciting episode of The Business of Freelancing.